This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 6, for Friday, September 29th, 2017. Voluntary Antimatter Containment Breach.
Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already!
Well, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts on The Topic is Trek, Clinton Allvord, and beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Kapla.
And Mr. Craig Stepp.
That's the new Klingon language.
Well, I see.
It's the same language. I thought you hurt yourself.
Skype must have been messing up.
Dropped a batleth on his foot. So it seems like
my bat was open in my pocket by accident.
It seems like we were just here a week ago, and usually we're here 2 weeks apart, but something interesting happened. The premiere of a new Star Trek series.
Wow, that just snuck up on us.
It did. Who saw that coming? Certainly right. None of us. So we're doing a special recording a week early. And there's going to be no subspace chatter news segment or a warp speed roundtable game in this episode. I'm sorry. This episode is strictly devoted to our thoughts about the premiere of Star Trek Discovery.
We'll be discussing it. Let's go.
Okay. We'll be discussing what we liked, what we hated, and everything in between. Let's start off very simply.
Wait, before we start.
Yes.
We should state up front that there will be spoilers be had.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, well, we should do the klaxon. There we go. How do you shut this off?
That's going to go the entire episode.
We're all scrambling around the bridge looking for the button.
Spoilers.
Well, where's the security override? Security override.
If you recall from our last episode, I posed the question, should we think about talking about the episodes and resounding yes from my co-host. So the way this is going to play out is when we record a show, we will be talking about any episodes of Star Trek Discovery that have aired. I do think that it's a good idea, though, that we mentioned spoilers up front. So if you've gotten this far into it and are really, really excited about listening to the rest of the episode and you don't like spoilers, sorry, go away. Come back next time.
You're welcome to listen to this right after. Yeah. Go watch the show, yep. Then play this.
That's right.
All right, so we are going to talk about episode 1 and 2.
That's right. Which means
if you've seen 2.
Yeah, so if you don't have CBS All Access.
Which is interesting because based on the general populace, the consensus that I've heard is 2 was really the home run. 1 was a setup, but you didn't. If that was their mission to try and get people to, I'll tease you with show number 1 so that you'll subscribe, I don't know if they hit the mark on that.
Right. I think that my first impression when we got into episode 2, we almost immediately went into backstory.
Right.
Where we have Burnham coming on to the Senjo, and I'm thinking, where was this in the first episode? If you didn't, you know, if you're an outsider trying to understand what this show is all about, you have no idea that this person has been raised, mm-hmm. in a Vulcan culture, and
she doesn't have the telltale ears. So how would you know?
I think that while I understand it's only a 15 episode season, if you give 2 of them away, that's a lot of the percentage of your show.
Sure.
But at the same time,
this is supposed to be the hook.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people said, I'm not going to bother, or I might try a free trial later on. It didn't grab them enough, and I really thought it was a disservice not to have... Well,
even even so, even if somebody, say people did sign up for the episode or the CBS All Access to watch episode two, you know, everything I've read, and you even mentioned this also, Clinton, was that the first two episodes, they kind of set the whole thing up. And then the third one is where their season really starts.
When you get to see Discovery.
Yeah, it's a preamble. It's prologue to really the story.
Which is nice, you know, in a way. That way we're not getting snippet in an episode, and it feels like, you know, flashback for half of the show. I'm trying
like
to think
Arrow.
Of like Arrow. Like Arrow. Yeah, that's where I was going. Yes. That gets tedious after a while.
Although if you don't think we're going to have flashbacks to Sarek and Michael on Vulcan or flashbacks to the Senjo and her time there, I've got a feeling that's going to happen.
Well, that's fine. But, you know, like an Arrow, there's really two stories going on in parallel.
Well, now that he's back. And now that he's been off the island for five seasons and the show's been on for five, six.
They finally had to stop.
Well, yeah, it's like, well, wait a minute. Now where are we? We're not back in... Anyway, we digress because on this show, the topic is Trek.
Ding. There you go. All right. Well, so, yeah, I'm okay with some flashbacks, but I just didn't want to like be really... heavy on it, but
Right. Are we still on initial impressions?
We're all over the board, but that's okay because
let's do round robin. And see what your initial reactions are, and then we'll go from there.
That's too structured for me. Yeah. I'm an artiste.
Let's start with you, Craig. What are your initial thoughts, impression?
Man, it sucked. I'm just kidding.
Man. I loved it.
Honestly, even though, despite what the little shortcomings we had with the first episode and stuff, I loved it. I thought it was really good. I love the style of the Klingons. I think they're a little more fleshed out than before. I like Michael Burnham all right. I like the guy playing Sarek, although he's a little bit of a departure, I think, from earlier Stoic Sarek. Technology was a little too much, I think, for the time period, but I thought the show was great.
When did Sarek become Sarek?
Sarek.
Is that like when Saul became Paul in the Bible?
Well, I was gonna say I heard something recently where somebody said potato, it's potato. Nobody says potato. So,
yeah, who says that? Who says that? That's right.
And how about you, Chuck? What are your initial
thoughts? Loved it. I fell in love with it the minute I heard the music. I said, this is awesome music. It's got the heart of Star Trek in it. It is well composed. Excuse me, I'm getting all choked up. The visuals were outstanding. This is movie grade production here, people. If you haven't seen it, go see it. If you haven't seen it, well, minus 10 points on your geek card at this point.
That's right.
I was ready for a slow start. We've seen this again and again with every show that comes out of the gate for the last 30, 40 years. Like, oh, well, that was interesting, but let's give it chance to get some legs, and we didn't have to wait long, obviously, for the second episode to get some legs. So I'm a subscriber.
Alrighty. And my feeling is pretty much the same, that I felt like it got off to a little bit of a slow start, and I will confess, I have an article up over on The Topic is Trek of my review of episodes 1 and 2, where I say that, you know, much like Deep Space Nine, it got off, my opinion, to a slow start, and things were unfamiliar, and I'm going, okay, there are glimmers of this and that, but is it enough? And then episode two, I said, yeah, okay, we're cooking. Mm-hmm. Now things are rolling.
It's hard to, you know, I can appreciate that from a writer's standpoint. It's hard to launch into this universe in one episode.
Yeah, you have to introduce a lot of stuff.
Right. Right, and because everybody is so familiar with the canon, you can't really diverge too much. So you got to stay in the universe. You've got to, but yet you want to let the horses loose. So, I mean, what do you start out with a battle at Wolf 357?
Right.
I mean, in some respects, we almost could have and explain how we got there, but you know, that would have been a backward forward and flashbacks inside of flashbacks, and we've got nah. So I'm okay with the first episode setting things up. It was teed up, and they drove it right down the fairway. Any golfers out there?
No, we're getting crickets for that one. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
Sports ball. I it's hard for me at this point to tell how much someone unfamiliar with Trek watching that episode was getting a sense of things. So how much of it was over-explaining certain things because they're not, you know, we'll assume that some people, this is their first time watching Star Trek.
Sure.
Especially on television.
You know, I hadn't thought about it from that approach, but that's a good point.
Yeah. You know, what is the mission of Starfleet? You know, the fact that Starfleet doesn't fire first. They kind of hint around. They don't say it by name, but the Prime Directive, all these type of things being thrown in to the mix. So you have to have a little bit of that. And the benefit, and I think it's been so long at this point, the benefit of having Trek on television, I'm using television in the sense of overall media as opposed to a movie, it's really online at this point, but is that you can take more time to do things.
Uh-huh.
Everything doesn't have to be wrapped up in 2 hours. And you can spend a few minutes to have a discussion in a room. Although, please, let's put the kibosh right now. No more lens flare. There was lens flare on the bridge.
Yeah,
and sent Joe, and I'm going, no, wait, how, right. No, stop that.
It was not overt, but it was like, did I just see a lens flare? And then I started watching for it, and then forgot about it because I wanted to get back to the story. So it was catching me every once in a while, subliminally.
I kind of like it a little bit, not over. I think it was overdone in the J.J. Abrams movie, but on the show, you saw it a few times, and I like it because it gives it a sense of sci-fi. I mean, just has that kind of atmosphere. So I'm fine with a little bit of lens flare, but you know, not overdoing it. Actually, I kept thinking of the Klingon beacon was bright enough. That was a J.J. Abrams.
Was it just me?
That was his first. It is JJ Kalis actually was the
lighting to sound effects. Was it just me, or did they repurpose the old TNG klaxons for the Klingon ship?
I'd have to go back and
that
check.
Kind of shrill noise.
Yeah, for the Klingon ship. Uh-huh. Yeah, there were some they reused a lot. Actually, on the Shenzhou, you could hear stuff like the doors, and I heard
a lot of pings.
Yeah, I heard a lot of TNG kind of sound effects around there. Yeah, the doors were shoop, and I was like, that's cool.
And but, there's definitely the pushing of the buttons or touching the screens, and you would hear that familiar clicky sound. Yes, you were hearing that on the...
Yeah. Well, we did hear a little bit of that, and some of it was very familiar with TNG. I could totally hear those sound effects, because I've had them on my phone in various places over the years. I should know them by now. I know
I saw one physical dial being turned.
Ooh!
I saw somebody flip a couple of switches, and that was
There were control... sticks that they were using at one point, and one person in the close-up turned a physical dial. I'm going, well, at least they haven't gotten rid of everything.
I know. So let's talk about the aesthetics of the ship and whatnot. So did you think the technology was too far?
Clearly it's too far if it's trying to fit in between Enterprise and TOS.
Right.
They don't have holograms on the ships. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I enjoyed in particular was when Michael Burnham goes to, I'm assuming, her quarters, and she calls Sarek, who apparently is just always there waiting for a call because he answered immediately.
You'd think he'd be busier.
Mark calling Orson. Come in, Orson.
He walked around the room and he leaned against the counter.
Yeah,
I thought the Skype VR sessions that happened were a little, they had to walk around the Admiral in the room. It's like, why? I'd want to walk right through him just to do it.
Yeah. I'm not touching you.
They might have to save that for the Orville, though.
And there was a few times when they kind of skipped and they were, especially the Admiral, he was like flipping around there for a minute. Yeah. I said, Harrison, he's got a little lag going on.
Latency.
Yeah. Well, but that was another thing that I felt like it was a bit advanced. The idea in TOS was that the Enterprise was really out on the frontier, and they say they're at the edge of Federation space. And the ships, other ships, got there very quickly.
Right.
And in TOS, you would have that standard where the only ship in the quadrant, blah, 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 blah.
Or one other ship, and that's it. Yeah.
But we had, you know, I don't know, a dozen or more ships suddenly just show up.
Maybe the beacon worked both ways.
I think they said 2 hours or something.
Dunkin' Donuts around.
Oh, well, I see. They're all just hanging around there. Yeah, all right. Well,
Admiral was getting some coffee.
You got a little bit of powder there on your. You might want to just.
Hey, okay. Before we get too far, yeah, the holograms, one thing that kind of took me away from that, although I thought it was kind of neat the way they did it, but yeah, for that time period, I think they probably shouldn't have had that.
Overstepped their limits a bit.
Yeah. Well, I kept thinking of the doctor from Voyager, you know.
Yes.
That was a
yes.
big thing when they got him out of the his hologram outside of the room because there's emitters and stuff around the.
Although he was a physical form, right? I think that was basically
he was very much a projection.
But I'm just saying that. That's what I'm saying. I know they're not solid, but they had projectors all over the ship at this point. So
they could
have had the doctor walking around, you know,
but he would not be able to. It's like when Moriarty comes out of the holo deck, the Next Generation.
He came out of the closet.
Yeah. He did. Right. It was a big set. I have no idea what parts coming in. So let's move on from the technology to the characters because, Trek is all about characters. Mm-hmm. One of the people that I'm going to be interested to see what happens to is Lieutenant Saru.
Yeah.
Yes.
He comes across at the beginning of somebody that you question why is this person on the bridge of a starship?
Yeah, very risk averse. Very, yeah. I'd rather stay at home.
Well, he lied on his resume.
Somebody.
I was the predator, not the prey.
Somebody dared him to be there. I'll bet you can't get into Starfleet. Starfleet.
I got the impression he was marginally adept at being a science officer.
Well, I mean, he gets pushed aside by Burnham to like try to bring that
literally.
Well, then he pushes back, which was nice to see.
Yeah,
and I have a feeling that his arc in this series is going to be overcoming that, to being less risk averse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they go very far in one direction, so that you can possibly see the progress. But it did leave you kind of going, really? You're a bridge officer?
Yeah.
And your answer to everything is run away?
Hide, stay home. Yeah.
He's an introvert. What are you saying?
Yeah. We can do space exploration from home. Look at SETI.
He just evolved from being food on his planet, okay? So, may I say that I thought, as far as the character itself goes, this look, I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did a good job with that.
I think the tricky thing for him is going, same thing as happens with the Klingons, is you're under so many appliances that you have to use other things to express all your emotion.
Like when you see him get excited and a little things popped on the side of his head.
Excuse me?
Like Zoidberg? Excuse me?
Yeah.
It's Klingons. The gills come out.
Suddenly there's ink all over the floor. What the heck happened there?
Yeah, even Harrison goes, what, did something just pop out the back of his head? I was like, I think it did. So anyway, I thought he was pretty well done as far. Actually, I'll stay right here. I think any of the characters that had makeup on, they all looked fantastic. And I thought he did, I thought it looked great.
Well, but yeah, they all had makeup on.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they all had makeup on.
Yeah.
Appliances, we'll say.
But I think I'm with you. I think Saru's going to have his own little arc going on because he's got a lot of stuff to overcome.
And we'll move on to what did you think of Captain Georgiou?
I was surprised.
Surprised by what happens to her?
Yeah.
So early?
Yeah, no, I was like, what? Wait. I was curious to see what happens to her. But I even saw some theories that when they get to the Discovery, that Georgiou and Michael Burnham were going to be kind of vying for the first officer spot on that ship. I'm like, no.
Nope.
That was a bad prediction.
Scratch that.
Yeah.
I thought she was fine. I would like to see her fleshed out a little bit more.
Yeah, I felt like we got to see, again, the case of second episode versus first. I thought that the dialogue in the very first scene where they're on a mission, which we can have questions about whether or not Starfleet actually should be going and trying to alter
something
on an actual planet. But I felt that that dialogue was very stilted, and again, we've got exposition going on there. And I felt the second episode where we get to see why the setup between these two characters happens, what that relationship is. We get to see her more in a battle situation. I felt like she was a lot stronger in the second episode and more rounded in the second episode, but she didn't get the chance when you lose a character like that. And I think we will have flashbacks. We will have some appearances of her as we go on, but when you lose them that fast, you don't have enough of an attachment to feel that loss. I felt like we were just getting to know her.
Right.
And didn't know her enough to feel that loss as strong as I think we were meant to.
Right.
You didn't get off the edge of your seat and go, no!
Yeah.
Well, I think they went on that mission at first. Like, one kind of introduced them. But I think it was to show how things were kind of mundane. And then all of a sudden, they're thrust into a war situation.
Possibly. I felt like it. Yeah. I mean, it definitely was to show this is the day-to-day thing that a ship like this does.
Let's shoot
that
down the wheel.
Yeah. That it's not, well, that's not a, it's not a, an armada. It's really a science exploration type of thing. And, you know, they do these type of things and it switches over. But I think it was also trying to build that dynamic between the two of them, what the relationship was between the two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they talk about the fact that they've been on the same ship for 7 years and you're trying to notice the difference of the way they speak, that Burnham is definitely speaking a lot more Vulcanish, but you don't know why yet. So that kind of is.
She definitely loosened up from when she first got there.
Yes. Yes. Well, getting into a uniform helped, but.
Hey, she was channeling Spock there for a minute when she was talking about how far the storm was. And I was like, oh wow. She's doing a good job. sounding convincing, even though I knew that she had a Vulcan background because of what I've read. So I was like,
yeah,
wow, she's really doing a pretty good job. It sounded reasonable.
Yeah. What was it? It was like approximately something, something, you know, in seconds. Approximately.
Yeah, no, right.
Well, what were your thoughts about the scene with the Klingon dead after the battle and they were gathering them up with the tractor beam and, hey, let's put a torpedo bomb on one of them. Wouldn't tractor beams detect a weapon and say, nah, let's leave that one out?
Remember, it was an ancient ship. I don't know.
It wasn't. It was modern enough to have a cloaking device.
And a tractor beam. I don't know.
I thought that was a little.
A transporter would. You know, they detect weapons, but I don't know about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was the
hey, they will from now on.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
the TSA is all over that now.
Lesson learned. Yeah.
The tractor beam would have to detect that it is that there's some foreign object in the body because you're not transporting it in.
It was on the body. I mean, they just bolted that thing to his gut and said, "See ya."
No, they. I believe it was inside.
I swear I saw it materialize on the outside and get hauled away. But okay.
I think what happens is, and again, I'd have to go back and look to be sure. But I think what happens is you see it materializing. I think so that you, the audience, see what is happening.
You get the idea.
But I don't think it was on the outside. I think it was.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that too. I was trying to figure that out too, because the first time I watched it, I went, "Oh, they're going to put it inside."
That's what I thought too.
Then I thought, "Well, wait a minute, is it not outside?" But I think maybe they were going to do that, and they just made it look like you get the idea that it's on him.
Because otherwise, they gave him a magnet and hooked it to his cowboy belt buckle.
Actually, I was like, okay, as soon as they realized they were using a tractor beam to pull him in, they were just going to throw one out there and let the tractor beam just do the work. I didn't know they were actually going to put it on the body, but
yeah. But if you just made it a tractor beam, if the tractor beam is locking in on a certain size thing, or you know, just they've identified, mm-hmm. you know, somebody may be actually inside identifying body, you know, and then having the tractor beam pull that object in. That if you had some foreign object, it's going to say, "Well, that not interested in the foreign." Otherwise, you're just going to have tons of space debris coming in from the, you know, from the wreckage. Mm-hmm. So you want to just get the body itself.
So the tractor beam operator is out of a job next week.
Absolutely.
Dang it again!
Nice going, Kapots.
Yeah, Kapots.
And was it a shot? I think the one shock to me with the Klingons was that T'Kunva dies. I mean, did not see that one coming.
I didn't either. I thought the mission was to take him prisoner, not make a martyr out of him. And
she got angry. She got angry because he killed.
Right.
I still have a hard time believing that a couple of Earthlings took out a couple of Klingons. That just seemed a little far-fetched to me.
Well, their ship just blew up.
Well, one didn't, so.
This is a warrior tribe.
Well, remember that they were in a little disarray. Their ship just got cut in half.
Yeah.
So everybody's spread out, running around, trying to
warrior tribe?
Well, I get the impression that, you know, warrior we don't know race. How many people, if they're in the bridge section of the ship, it's possible that because that got essentially severed from the rest of the ship, that there really weren't that many people in that section of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would have thought T'Kunva would have been in the nose of that thing and like, "Hey, yay, we severed it." But yet they went to the part of the ship that remained and lo, there he was.
Well, they both remained. It was just, didn't they just, the explosion was essentially in the neck.
Right.
Because then the bridge, the forward section just lurched downward.
Oh, I thought it broke completely free.
No, I think it just lurched down.
Ah.
Yeah, it kind of split up and was like a Titanic kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Since we're on the unbelievable.
Well, it is science fiction.
Jeez.
How about outsmarting the computer to let me out of the failing prison?
I would think that you wouldn't have to outsmart the computer to let you out of the failing prison, for crying out loud.
Yeah. I can't break safety protocols. But, well, I'm dying, aren't I? How much time do I have left? And it's like, oh, okay, I'll let you go then. Like, what? You can't logic with a computer like that, in my opinion. Now, maybe it is in the future, so maybe.
Well, she is She was raised Vulcan. She can logic the computer.
That's right. And I think that it was an existential, you know, discussion with an artificial intelligence. And I get the impression that it was more, I likened it to one comment I was making to somebody, it's more like an Asimov discussion.
It felt more like a Harry Mudd moment where I always lie.
Well, no, I think it was a case of well, you can follow protocol, but you are going to cause harm to a human if you follow protocol.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you points for that, and I'll also give Craig points for bringing up the Vulcan logic thing, because that wasn't an ordinary human, you know, a Captain Kirk talk my way out of this moment.
Yeah, but I did have vision.
Computer, would you like to have sex? No.
What, are you going
to
die?
All I can hear is Alexa responding to that right now. I was going to say
I was having visions of, all right, Siri, I want you to open the door, you know, and have an argument with Siri trying to outlogic her.
Well, I'm going to have to ask Alexa after the show to open the pod bay doors.
It does respond to that.
Yeah, it responds to almost every geek that reference. I should have brought my dash wand in here.
Go ahead, Clinton.
And we don't really know all that much about Vok, who appears that he's going to be taking up the mantle and leading the charge here. And it's like, we know nothing about this character.
Because here is some cred from the committee or the council.
Yeah. I mean, he was now apparently, and I'm scrolling back to Cole, who was one of the holographic figures, the one who had the
he backed out,
that said, you know, yeah, he said, I'm not going to hang around for this. Apparently, he was a protege of T'Kuvma.
Oh.
And he must have rebelled against him. And now there's this tension between Cole and Vok, I think we're going to be seeing somehow.
Yeah. As a
because he was belittling him.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They were all belittling him because of his albinoism.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And which I did like. Okay, let's start. Let's keep talking about the Klingons themselves. Mm-hmm. I like the whole deal with I can never say his name right. T'Kuvma thought that he was Kalis kind of reborn and was trying to reunite everything. And I think it added a whole other layer to this whole Klingon thing, especially when you see all the Klingons and you know they're divided and they all kind of look a little different. They don't look exactly the same.
They're supposed to. They made a point of that in the pre-show sneak peeks and articles and whatnot, because there are different houses on different worlds. You're going to have different biological diversity.
Yeah. One of them had jewelry hanging off. Another one. Yeah. So I was down with that because you look back at TNG, they all had the same uniforms on. They all look the same.
Right.
You know. Okay.
Well, except Lursa and Bator. Diversity?
Huh? Well,
except for Lursa and Peter.
Well, they had less costume. I don't know.
Foam.
Or
that's all I'm gonna say. Foam.
Yeah. What's her name from Voyager? I'm skipping on her name.
Seven of Nine.
B'Elanna. Yeah, B'Elanna. Well, she was half Vulcan.
Yeah.
So yeah, but they need some little diversity. But hey, she is the personification of what they.
That much. He's dead, so you know, don't worry too much about it.
Well, she was the personification of what he didn't want to happen.
That's right.
Yes, he didn't want the Federation to come in and then water down the Klingons. So there you go.
Right, and I think that essentially is going to be continued, and I've got a feeling amplified by Vok, that we jump forward a bit, I believe, in episode 3. I don't remember how far it is. I can't remember if they were talking about it in After Trek or something, but it's a leap forward, not a lot, but a little leap forward. And I have a feeling that we're going to join this with Vok probably a lot more in control. It'd be interesting to see the dynamic between all these 24 houses, some of whom are going, yeah, and some of whom
absolutely. I love the way that they brought up that whole split decision, North versus South thing. I mean, it was you're not going to have consensus and go, yeah, man, I like what Takuvma's saying. Let's get on board, man.
I'm down with him.
You're going to have some dissension in the ranks and go, yeah, he's a Looney Tune. You know, there's only one K less. And especially since we used to beat the crap out of him when he was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
That was those guys. Not a good flashback, man. He's having serious psychological issues. Childhood trauma coming back.
Well, that's one thing I talk about in the article is that this is a show where all of your characters, pretty much that we've seen, are damaged in some way or they have flaws. And I think that those flaws are going to be what drives the story forward. You know, you have Burnham saddled with so many issues at this point, and she's got so far to travel because, you know, her parents are dead. You know, she was raised in two different cultures. She's seen her captain die. She's committed mutiny. She's been put, yep. I mean, she's got a ton of things going on with her. We already talked about Saru, who's definitely got issues of, you know, flight issues.
he belongs in the 100-acre wood, man.
Yeah. We have all the Klingons having their own agendas and issues going on with them. And I think that it's nice to have a lot of different dynamics in play here.
You're right. This is where I love it, but I think that adds for a much more colorful cast of characters. From a writer standpoint, that becomes very touchy because you have legacy characters like Sisko who came in damaged. So you got to be careful how you navigate those waters because the fans are always going to be comparing and go, oh yeah, we saw that before. Yeah. I think that gets very tricky, and I'm excited to see how they're going to pull that off without, you know, running into previous character plots. But I thought that was one of the things that made Deep Space Nine initially great was you had a damaged commander and he had to pull it together, be convinced he was a leader more or less. And yeah, it's going to be fun to see.
Right. And, you know, you had a couple of damaged people in that. I mean, Garak was certainly damaged. Kira.
Yeah,
I think, yep. You know, was damaged. And so I think
Julian was just messed up. He was egotistical at first.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he just wanted to punch that guy. Julian. Dr. Bashir on Deep Space Nine.
Oh,
first yeah, couple episodes, right. Like, just somebody punch him. Well, throw him out the airlock and get this over with.
He'll be a subject of an upcoming Warp Speed Roundtable. see what happens to dear Julian. But yes, I think that that's good. So let's talk about that. What do you think? Where do you see things possibly going in the story at this point? I mean, we haven't really seen the Discovery yet. We don't know anything about the Discovery. We don't know.
We got a sneak peek on the after show.
We did. We saw the interior of it, which was interesting. It seemed to have a space in engineering for that table,
yep,
that you often see in engineering, but there was nothing there.
Well, the engineers were working at pods too. They're sort of at stations, and somebody came in and stuck a can of paint in the wall.
But also in the background, it looked like it had a modification of that force perspective engine that we saw in TOS.
Yep.
So in the background there, we know from everything that Jason Isaac has said is that the captain is another damaged character.
I think
he refers another. To him as like probably the most screwed up captain you've ever seen in Star Trek.
Wonderful.
So again, I think this is a case of the story's going to be driven forward by this dynamic and how that plays against the story. And I haven't seen yet necessarily the connection between the two parts, but I think that, again, when we get into what I'm referring to as chapter one as opposed to prologue, that's going to make a bit more sense as to why we have so much of this in these particular sections, if you will. But I just get the impression that whatever Discovery is doing is not, it's either not authorized to be doing, or it's doing under something like Section 31.
I mean, not authorized, but CBS owns it.
Well, yes, that's right. They said, Les Moonves said, how did this happen? No, that, yeah. It just something strikes me about it as they're doing.
It's either subversive or top secret.
Yeah. I have nothing to base that on other than the look of things. I mean, when you walked into in that clip that they showed on After Trek, when Burnham walks into engineering, everyone is very quiet. Very much, you know, we all have our stations to be at, and just, we know the captain is a little off. I just have a feeling it's either that or he's some sort of, you know, you've got some HMS Bounty thing going on here at some point.
Yar, where's me whale?
Yeah.
What about you guys? What do you think?
As far as predicting what's coming up, go ahead. Yeah, Frank, go ahead.
Where do you think things are going?
Throw it out there.
Well, something that did strike me was, remember when Takuma mentioned the battle at, I forget the name of the planet, started with a D, something right. Five.
Right, which was around Sherman's planet and was referred right. to in other shows, yes.
Yeah, so when they mentioned, I looked it up, and it was near Sherman's planet, which is also near K-7, the space station.
Right.
Where the Trouble of the Tribbles, and of
Cyrano
course,
Jones.
We had Harry Mudd. And so I'm like, you know, I think that's all going to play in somehow. I don't know how that's going to come together, but I think they're going to give, obviously, Michael a shot at redemption because they're transporting her on the Discovery to a penal colony.
Well, I get the impression, and again, it's just the impression, she definitely is on a transport with other prisoners from what we saw. And I can't tell whether the Discovery is supposed to be transporting them or whether they've been diverted to the Discovery. Because kind of one of the other officers is questioning why Burnham is there and things like that. And he seems, sounds like he has an agenda in mind.
She's part of the Suicide Squad now.
Ah, I see.
That's right. I don't know. You, of course, got the whole background with the war going on, which I hope they don't play on every episode with that. But
it's probably it's going to make up the bulk of the first season. But yeah. I mean, it's not going to be resolved, obviously.
Yeah. No, I don't expect it.
Right.
No, I don't expect it to be, but... I don't want every episode to focus on it. And I hope
if the show goes, 5, 6, 7 years, like we all hope and pray and wish, I don't want to still be dredging over the same backstory, it's like, I know we're still in the war, but it's kind of like, I know Voyager is still lost in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah. It's right. Like you don't want to have, here's the space battle of the week.
Well, I mean, based on what we saw last week, not too bad. I wouldn't complain.
Maybe you do want that. I don't know.
I do want to see more Sarek. Maybe a little more Vulcan action. He mentioned in the After Trek talk show that he was going to have a little action. I was like, okay, I'm down for that. But then again, Sarek is not the kind of guy we've seen. He's always an older guy and kind of. Much more in the Vulcan mainstream than even Spock.
Yes.
let's talk about that long distance Vulcan mind meld for a minute.
Yeah, that first of all, I felt like, man, Spock is just getting cheated out of everything left and right, isn't he?
Didn't get a new car when I turned 16 either.
Yeah.
I had less of a problem with that than I did with the hologram.
Really?
I felt like if you want to, and I think that you could even make the argument that you're seeing this as a physical manifestation, because how else are you going to see it? Where she might not be perceiving it as, here's my entire body, and here's Sarek's entire body, and here's a background. You know, it could be a voice in her head. It could be shapes. It could be feelings, you know. So to me, I accepted that more. And I felt like, all right, we haven't seen this before, but let's face it. Every time something new comes up in Trek, you know, in the entire history of Trek, it's just a new thing that happens.
Well, hold on. Hold on a second there. It has happened before.
Oh, all right. When did that happen
before? Are you talking about McCoy?
No, Trip Tucker and T'Pol on Enterprise. They had a telepathic thing going on. They had mind melded before.
Right.
And then they had a long distance
The rationale for Sarek was because part of his Katra was in Michael.
Right.
That was how he you know, that was what I got out of it anyway. Is working because of what happened before. There's a remnant of him, and maybe he's just talking to himself at this point.
Well, they mind meld, but I'm just saying it's happened before. Trip and T'Pol did it, and they had a interstellar conference, basically.
All right. I don't recall that episode. So that's good. That's why there's three of us here. There you go. We've got some.
Yeah, I got to go back and look at all the details, but I do remember that happening.
But
Trip was one of my favorite characters on that show for
reason. But that brings up the point. I mean, even if it hadn't happened, so in Enterprise, if the same thing happens, you know, you can look at it sideways and go, "Wait a minute, Vulcans don't do that." But that's always, you know, Vulcans suddenly developed a nerve pinch because Leonard wanted to have a nerve pinch. They have this because Leonard wanted that. I mean,
right.
You're introducing new things all the time.
Well, and I'm down with it, but I don't want it to be a crutch either. Every time she gets in a pinch, let me go think of daddy.
Hey, I got daughters. I get it.
Yeah. Are you sitting at home going, getting a funny feeling, start looking up like, what am I hearing? There's voices.
Pick it up and start talking to him on Skype. Yeah, same thing. Long distance. You need money again. Yep, I get it.
So real quick, did y'all notice any, I guess we got to wrap up here soon because y'all are messaging me without saying anything on the show.
Nope. No. But,
to lift that curtain, Craig.
Yeah, I was going to say, how the sausage is made in space. we've got a few minutes left, but I mean, we could go on for hours, but we'll try to keep this to our normal time of an hour. So we've still got a few minutes. So go ahead.
Hey, by the way, there was one thing, and I can't put my finger on it to talk about it, you know, with authority, but I saw where there was mentioned before, was it in TNG about, it was a name similar to Tacoma, but in relation to Kalis and the prophecy. And then it actually, you know, his name is Takuvma. The name is slightly different from in the story from TNG, and I got to go find it because I wish I could. I had to talk about it here.
William Tecumseh Sherman.
Yeah, that's it. How'd you know? So there was a
Toledo, Ohio. Yes.
Not really an Easter egg, but who was the Daft Punk person on the bridge?
Apparently, people are saying that was a robot, and I. Yeah, I kept expecting to play Get Lucky. I don't know because unless it survived, you know, and gets an escape pod, we may never see it again because it was on the Senjo. And are we going to?
When they went on red alert, even the little screen said, you know, red alert
Something. In the classic one with the red bands going toward the center, which I thought was interesting.
You know, I kept when I saw that a guy and Harris goes, "Wow, what was that?" I said, "I kept thinking of the robot chicken when they had the night crew come on the bridge and they're all partying." Yeah, yes.
He's the night crew
DJ. And it had it or he or she, whatever it was, I believe had a line, and the line was not a
query
robotic sounding voice. It seemed like it was normal speech pattern.
Yeah, right.
So it I don't know if it's possible that that was someone with the, I'm throwing this out there, with the equivalent of a VR headset on. I mean, I don't know.
It's just a random stagehand who happened to be on set accidentally. So they rolled
it
in.
Hey, this thing is cool. Put him on.
Let's see. There was a couple of Easter eggs that I thought were pretty cool. They were actually showed them after the fact because I don't think the camera ever got close enough to really show it. But in the captain's bookshelf, the books, all the titles were episode TOS episodes.
What?
Or Star Trek episodes.
Yeah, cool. they were all TOS episodes. We had one that was The City on the Edge of Forever, Amok Time, Trouble with Tribbles. Those were the titles of the spines of the books.
The Man Trap. Oh, wait, a woman wouldn't want a book called The Man Trap in her office.
Or she would, whichever. I don't know.
Spock's brain.
Well, you know, that's, you don't want that for bedtime reading because you're just going to be all upset. So that was
Spock's brain. Where the Chateau Picard was at. There was a bottle of Chateau Picard there.
Yes.
In Michael's quarters, they had those little dividers that was kind of reminiscent of TOS, like Kirk's. You know, they always had that little red divider. They had some of that kind of separating the room a little bit.
Oh, cool. I can go back and check that out.
Wasn't necessarily red, but it had that kind of pattern. You know, it was kind of separating.
Sark was getting in the way. I couldn't see it.
Yeah. Just walk around him. That was weird when he went over and sat on her desk. I'm like, how's he doing that?
Does
he
have
the same picture set up in his room? I don't know.
A little weird.
No, he was actually in her old room, and she liked it so much that that's the way she set up her new room. So yeah, it was the same. You know, kids are like that. I got a daughter who wants to buy grandma's couch because grandma got a new couch, and that's what she grew up on, and it's her favorite thing. So you know, I can see Michael doing that. I want my new room set up exactly like my old one. That way, when Dad sits down, it'll look right.
It's
just Daddy's little girl.
Yeah. It's already got Daddy's little butt grooves already in it. It's ready to go. before we moved on, I was thinking that the robot guy on the bridge, it was probably an early prototype from Dr. Nguyen Singh.
Oh, yeah. This one didn't work out so well. You can have it. You
fail.
Get the facial features just right.
You could program in your own face with eyes and everything.
That was the M1. Thank you, Richard Daystrom.
Hey, when they got in battle, I was ready for the crap emoji to show up on the screen.
We can work on that for the edit for next time. Brilliant idea.
Put some lens flare on it.
Red, on one of the screens, red alert. Another one's a little crap icon.
That would be on Saru's screen.
Right. Oh, crap.
He's got that as an automatic. It's just like, it's a sticker on his panel. But
it's not even on the screen. It's just permanently there.
It's background.
Hey, would you like some coffee, Saru? Crap.
It's hot. Ah, run.
Good morning, everyone. Crap.
Hey, do you guys ever think we're going to see something like the Enterprise, maybe Pike flying around somewhere?
If we do, I've got a feeling we'd have to wait a couple of seasons for it. Now, they also talked at one point, I think it was one of the producers. I believe they talked about as the show goes on, and I don't think they necessarily meant this season, you would start to get more infusion of TOS coloring and aesthetic.
Yeah,
homages. So I, you know, again, I had a feeling it wasn't like by episode 15, it will suddenly look like TOS. You know, that's not what they have in mind, but.
Well, even in the next episode, the preview, they had Michael was in the yellow, like prison uniform, but, or something, whatever it was. I'm not sure of the context, but yeah, she had that yellow shirt on and it looked very TOS like.
I see. So everyone on Pike's Enterprise is in prison. So that explains a lot.
Yeah. Way to go, Pike.
All right. Well, we're just about ready to wrap this up. I will say that it was great to have this discussion, especially for the first time we've had a new Star Trek series on television in 12 years. Woo-hoo!
Yay! Let's get the applause. Beam me up. There we go. Everybody's excited.
And I don't know how we'll play this from here on out, whether we'll try to do, again, every other week and try to bunch up two episodes. I mean,
let's do that. Let's kind of spread them out a little bit.
Okay. And I think that will work out because we will hit the hiatus a little later on this year, and then we'll be stay on that schedule, and we'll be
sure
talking about normal our normal fare of things to discuss, which is going to be, what do we think is going to happen when Discovery comes back?
yeah.
But yeah, so we'll go back to, so if you're listening to this and you're already well honed in on that 2-week schedule that we have, we're going back to that. So stay tuned.
Woo-hoo.
But in the meantime, I believe it's time for us to boldly go. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out our other mostly non-Trek related podcasts that we work on, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt.
No.